Frank Alcoholic. Thanks, Owen, for inviting me to this collaboration of superpowers in recovery, Al-Anon AA speaker meeting. I've actually done this one time before, about 10 years ago. It was actually on a Christmas night. And I got a call saying, hey, you want to, like, yeah, why, sure. So thank you, Owen. Thanks for asking me to come share my experience, strength, and hope. I am a real alcoholic. I have a sobriety date, February 26, 2007. I have a sponsor. I am in active participation with him. And I sponsor other men in this program. I have a home group. It's the Love and Service Group. It's an open speaker meeting. All are welcome. It's Sunday night at the Hope Center on the corner of Taylor and Morello in Pleasant Hill. We also, Thursday night, have a Steps Tradition Concept meeting, a newcomer meeting, a big book meeting, and now a meditation meeting. That's Thursday at 7 at the same place. There actually used to be a Al-Anon meeting there Thursday night at 7 p.m. So it's my, I'm going to share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me now. I started drinking when I was 10 years old. And by the time I was 10 years old and I took that first drink, I needed the first drink. I was taken away from my mom when I was 5, me and my brother, and put into foster homes. And I was abused and he was abused. And it was a really traumatic time and experience for me. I've never met my real father. So the first 5 years of my life, I was raised around drug addicts and ex-felons. And the next 5 years of my life, I was in foster homes, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience. So when I was 10 years old and I had the opportunity to take that first drink, it was like a lifesaver for me. That immediately became my solution. And it was my solution for a long time. Because it made the pain go away. And I didn't have the tools or the coping mechanisms or any of the stuff that parents normally teach their children when they're growing up. So I didn't have any of that. So when the pain was happening, all I wanted to do was make the pain go away. And when I was 10, I took one drink of alcohol and that has always been the solution until I got into recovery. Now, I started drinking when I was 10. I got reunited with my mom. And then the guy that she married at that time was very abusive to us. I'd never been abused like I was by the guy that she married that time. And so we moved around, we ran away from him, and we moved all up and down the West Coast, and just all kinds of stuff was going on, and ended up in Antioch, where I got into high school, and I finished up my high school. I barely graduated, and I didn't know what to do when I graduated high school. I didn't have any kind of direction in my life. I never had met my father. It wasn't like, okay, son, what are you going to do with your life? There was just none of this. And the best thing I could come up with was to join the Navy. I joined the Navy, got out of boot camp, got stationed in Alameda, was put on a USS Carl Vinson CVN 70 aircraft carrier. That was in like October of 1989, went on a Westpac, which is the Western seaboard of like the Asia, like Japan, Singapore, Hong Kong, did all of that. came back to Alameda, and then they stationed us up in Bremerton, Washington. Now, when I got to Bremerton, Washington, they took our ship out of water for dry dock. They were going to refuel the reactors. So they took everybody off the boat. And so my division, we all got jobs on base. And the job that I had on base was I had 4 days on and 4 days off. So the 4 days that I worked, I was drinking in the morning, I was drinking at lunch, and I was definitely drinking. I didn't even leave the base. I went to the, they call it the commissary. I can't remember. Yeah, the commissary on base got two 40s. I drank those two 40s on the way home, stopped at the liquor store on the way home, got more booze. And those were the days that I worked. The 4 days that I had off, it was as soon as I woke up and I could get someone to buy me booze, I was drinking as much as I could all day, pass out about 2 o'clock, sleep for about a half an hour, wake up, and then drink all night. That's my drinking career. I never really enjoyed the taste of alcohol, but I desired the effect. It was an obsession because it just made, and you know, the older I got, the bigger mistakes I started making, more shame, more guilt, more just like, oh God, I just can't take it. I can't take it. I was always running away. And the alcohol, and I got into drugs, and just it was just a mess. And on my 21st birthday, when I turned 21 is when it really went bad, because I didn't need anybody to buy me booze. On my 21st birthday, I went to the liquor store. I was the first person in line at the liquor store, but I was the only person in line. It was 10 a.m. But I went in there and I walked out of there with as many 40s of Old English and St. Ides as I could carry. And I went home proudly. And I drank them all. And then like by 12 or 1 o'clock, the sad part about my disease is that I get behind the wheel of a car, whether I'm drunk or sober, and I go get more of what makes me feel better. Thank God I never killed anybody. I never ran anybody over. The pain that I inflicted was emotional pain, not only to myself, but to everybody around me. I always thought that I'm not hurting anybody, but the reality is that everybody that knew me, I know now that everything that I do is a direct reflection of who I am. And if I'm drinking and drugging and getting loaded and taking advantage of people and hurting people, that is affecting everybody around me in a negative way. I didn't know and I didn't care. All I knew is that the alcohol was my solution and I did whatever I could to get it. About 2 or 3 months after my 21st birthday, I ended up getting into a lot of trouble. I broke into somebody's house and assaulted them. And Jason, your speaker's on. I broke into somebody's house and I assaulted them and I got in trouble. And I went in front of the judge and the judge gave me 8.5 years in the state penitentiary. And that was a different way of living. So I did 8 of those 8.5 years. When I got out, I remember when I got out and I was in Washington at this time. So they dumped me off in downtown Seattle, never been to Seattle before. I get off the bus and I got my box of stuff. And I got locked up when I was 21. Now I'm 29 years old and I'm standing on downtown Seattle. I don't even know where I'm going. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know what to do right now. I was happy to be out, but I didn't know what to do. I asked somebody, how do I get up to this address? And I don't think there was cell phones. I caught a bus, I got up to this place where I was living, this clean and sober place. I did really good for about a year. And I got a job and I was working with this guy and he saw me riding the bus and he said, Frank, I see you riding the bus. Do you want to ride home? I'm like, yeah, I'll take a ride home. And he said, well, I'm going to stop on the way home and get a beer. Do you want one? And I was like, how long has it been since I had a beer? At that time, it had been 9 years. And I said, yes, I will take one. He came out of the store with this thing, this tall can of Bud Ice, never seen it before. And I took one sip of that and I was like, oh man, There it is. There's that stuff. Drank the whole can. I believe what makes me an alcoholic is that I immediately wanted another one. And not even within a matter of 60 days after I took that one, that first sip, I was a full-blown alcoholic again. I was eating mushrooms and taking ecstasy and just, I was smoking. I was a wreck. I was worse off than I was when I got in trouble the first time. I finished up my probation up there. I moved back home to Antioch. My mom was still there and I got a pretty good job, but I was still drinking and using. And then I ran into some really bad stuff and some bad people. And I got involved with doing some bad drugs and ended up doing some bad things. And I started breaking the law again. And I got caught. I got caught breaking into these businesses at night. And I go back in front of the judge, and the judge wants to give me 25 years to life. And I was like, but I said, Your Honor, this is a nonviolent misdemeanor. And he says, well, the law requires that you're a three strike candidate. And he said, next. And so for the next 6 months, I was in county and I didn't know what to do. And I was crying every night and I was doing those prayers. God help me. I get a call. They called me up to the duty office in the county jail. And they said, you need to go call your lawyer. I call my lawyer and he says, okay, here's the deal. And he says, they're going to give you 36 months and you better take it. And I said, I will, because 36 months sounded a lot better than 25 years to life. So I plead guilty. They give me 36 months. I get sent over to San Quentin for 6 months. And then they send me down to this prison in Avenal, California. And I get there and I meet this little old man. His name is Dwayne B. We become really good friends. And at the time that I was there and I was getting ready to get out and I was walking the yard with Dwayne. And Dwayne says to me, he says, Frankie, get ready to get out, right? And I was like, yeah. And he says, well, why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous when you get out? And I was like, I was like, what? Why? I said, I know I got a problem with drugs. I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And he said, Frank, call Alcoholics Anonymous when you get out. I'm like, whatever. So, excuse me. So I get out and I'm sitting in there and I didn't have anywhere to go. So the parole department, they put me in this hotel room out in West Pittsburgh. And I mean, that hotel was so bad. The day that I moved out of there, they mowed it down with tractors. So I was sitting out here in this hotel room out in West Pittsburgh and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I didn't have any money. I didn't even have ID. And the parole officer is knocking on my door every day. You need to do this and you need to do that. You got 2 weeks or I'm taking you back to jail. And I'm just like, oh my God doing for me what I would never be able to do for myself. I hear Dwayne in my head saying, why don't you call Alcoholics Anonymous when you get out? And I'm like, oh. So I'm like, how do I do that? There's a phone book in my room. I open up the phone book and there's AA is in there. I was like, damn it, AA. So I call AA and this lady who I love dearly today, she answers the phone. She's like, AA hotline, how can I help you? And I'm like, oh, lady, ugh. And I said, I'm not drinking. I'm not loaded. I just got out of jail and I don't know what to do. She starts talking. Nah, nah, nah. And I hear her say, do you want help? And I said, yes. And she said, give me your number. I have somebody call you within the hour. 15 minutes later, this dude is just as happy as she was. I'm going to come get you and take you to a meeting. And I'm like, no, no, you're not. No, I didn't know what AA was. I didn't know anything. I heard it through the years and being locked up. I did not know what it was. I had no clue what it was. And he's like, here's these people. They're so excited. And I'm like, I was like, no, I'm good. But what he did say was, he says, when you're ready, give me a call. I hang up the phone and I'm like, man, that was dumb. Couple days go by, I call him, he doesn't answer. A couple more days go by, I call him, he doesn't answer. So I'm out, now at this time I'm out 2 weeks and my phone rings. And I look at the phone and I was like, oh, it was this guy. They answered the phone and he said, Frank? And I was like, yeah. He said, are you going to let me help you or not? And this is, I don't know about, this is just my story. I've never in my life had somebody ask me twice in 1 week if I needed help. And I said, yes. And so he came and took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I walked into that room, changed my life. It was the Alamo Big Book at Monday night, 8 o'clock, changed my life. And I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that night. The man that came to pick me up and took me to that meeting became my sponsor. And what I did was for a couple of years, I followed him around everywhere he went. Everywhere he went, I followed him around. And he showed me what he didn't tell me what AA was. He showed me what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was. And how he showed it to me was through his service to the program, his service to the still suffering alcoholic. He had devoted his life to Alcoholics Anonymous. And not only him, his wife was even, they're both. They have given their lives to being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I followed them around. I was even in hotel rooms with them. And when, if I couldn't get in with somebody else, I would stay in their hotel room. And Kent, or my sponsor used to, Kent, used to throw pillows at me because I'd be snoring. So my life changed. My life changed. And things started to get good. And he started to say stupid things to me. He started saying, why don't you go help them stack chairs? Why don't you go help them make coffee? Why don't you go see if you can't help with literature? Or why don't you go greet at the door? And I'm like, why? Why? Why do you keep saying these things? I'd be sitting down at Roadrunners at Saturday. And he wanted me to go to this meeting Saturday morning at 7 o'clock with 150 men. I'm like, why? Oh, and I would go there and sit down. He'd come up to me and he'd tap me on the shoulder. He says, why are you sitting down? Go say hi to people. Go meet people. I'm like, why? I didn't get it. I understand now. He was showing me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And changed my life. It changed my life. This program has changed my life. Started going through the 12 steps and started working on defects of character and fear and worry and anger and resentment and just life. Here I am, just out of jail, not knowing which way to go. And I just start following this guy around and I start following suggestion. And miraculously, my life is getting better. And over the past 14 years, it's continued to get better. Because I just keep showing up. I keep making myself available to be of service. I've had a service commitment since my first week of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always been of service in one way or another. I've always had some of the best service I've ever done is the service that I didn't want to do. Hey, we're going to go to this conference. I'm like, no, I don't want to go to no dang conference. You're going to go stay with me? No, I don't want to. I go there and meet this the most amazing people and have the most amazing time and instill memorable moments that I remember to this day of going on road trips with him. But I didn't want to. I absolutely didn't want to. He said he wanted to start a new meeting, our home group, which is the love and service group I told you. And I go to the planning meeting with him and like these 12 or 13 other crazy people that want to start a meeting on Sunday at 6 o'clock. Like, why? Sunday at 6? Are you kidding? But what I didn't know was that those people that were at that meeting, those people are the people that turned out the every single one of those people had everything I've ever wanted in life. They were living good lives. They were being of service to people. They were on the front lines of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, these people had me going to I would go to the homeless shelter. I remember one of the best things I did was going to the East Bay Stand Down. I don't know if anybody knows what that is. It was, they go for a weekend down in Pleasanton or Dublin, and they use the whole fairgrounds, and they round up 500 or 600 or 700 homeless veterans, and they clean them up and they give them haircuts and dental and court. And it's just an amazing, I was like 1 and 2 and 3 years sober doing that. It was the, I couldn't believe it. It's just incredible. It was amazing. Miraculously, you take a guy like me who could never put life together. I can never put it together. I can never figure out that the problem was me, that my disease centered in my mind, and that I did anything and everything that I could to do whatever it took to make me feel better. I wanted to fill up this hole that was in me. And unfortunately, I wasn't taught the right way. So I just did whatever I wanted. And, you know, since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't been back to jail. I think I got one ticket one time. I was talking to a sponsee on my cell phone at 6 in the morning, and the cop wasn't hearing that. I was just like, but I don't shoplift anymore. I mean, there wasn't a store that I went into that I didn't steal from since before I was even drinking, since I was a child. But the biggest thing that, one of the toughest things in my life that I've been going through for like 10 years is watching my mom drink herself to death. And I remember the first time about 10 years ago when my mom ended up in the hospital, and her husband at the time had called me and she said, "Hey, Frank, your mom's not good. You need to come see her." And I'm like, okay. So I drop everything. I tell my work, "Hey, I got to go. I got to go to Reno," because that's where my mom was. And I go to the hospital, and I had never witnessed anybody detoxing. And I didn't know. I get to the hospital and I go up to my mom's room, and she's strapped down. And I freak out. And she's yelling and screaming, "Let me out of here. Take this shit." Just, and she's strapped down. And I'm like, and she sees me and she goes, "Frank, Frankie, come here, get over here. Take these things off of me. I gotta get out of here." And I'm like, oh my God. I had no idea what was going on. And I started getting mad. I'm like, why is she strapped down? What's going on? And they said, "Well, she's detoxing." And I'm like, why? Undo her, take those off of her. And they're like, "We can't." And I stressed out, I freaked out. I went out into the hallway and I called my sponsor. And I said, "Kent, what are they doing to my," he said, "You're not there to be her doctor. You are there to love and support your mom. Let them be the doctors. Let them do what they need to do." And you know what that did for me was, when I hung up the phone and I got off the phone with him, there was a shift. And when I went back into that room, I was just like, okay, she's detoxing. She's out of her mind. And they gave her like Ativan or something. And then she calmed down and she quieted down. And I was just like, "God, you know, I don't know what to do. All I want to do is help her. How can I help her? I got to help her." I felt responsible. So I stayed there for like 3 or 4 days. And I had to go back to work. So I come back to California. Now, unfortunately, over the past 10 years, she's been in and out of the hospital. Visits are becoming more and more frequent. And I used to really, really, really worry and try to like take responsibility and try to help her and try to, I wanted her recovery more than she doesn't want recovery. And I just like, Mom, please just get better. And I would listen to her each time in the hospital. And she would be like, okay, I'm not going to drink. I'm not ever going to do it again. I promise. And she would get out, and on her way home, she would stop and get some booze and stop and get some cigarettes and go home and get drunk. And I would call my sponsor and I would be like, man, she's doing it again. Why does she keep doing it? And I thought if she was doing it to me, and she's not doing it to me. She's suffering from her own disease. She's suffering from the disease of alcoholism. And there's nothing that I'll ever be able to say or do that will change her. It's painful. And but what I'm doing is I'm allowing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to show me what I gotta do. And what I gotta do is I just gotta know that there is a loving God and there is an all-powerful God that I can turn to, and I can say, God, I don't know what the story is with my mom. All I can do is worry about me. And just try to turn my will and my life over to the power greater than myself. And just say, you know what? Thank God it's not me. So let me tell you where I'm at today. Today, last night at work, 4 days ago, I get a call. My mom was at the bar. I don't even know how my mom's even alive today. She's at the bar. She calls, they call an ambulance. They send her to the hospital about 4 days ago. Hospital calls me, your mom's here. Okay. We're going to do this and do that and do this. I've heard it over the years. I've just heard it over and over again. But, you know, it's becoming easier and easier for me to just say, okay. Okay, so you got her there again? Okay. And she's getting more and more and more delusional. She's going to end up with a wet brain. She's on her way there. She gets delusional and she doesn't know what she's doing. So I call again last night. I haven't heard anything. I called last night and they said, oh, well, we released her. And I'm like, how did she get home? I don't know how she got home. My brother, at the same time, got hurt at his job. He's at the same hospital as she's at. So I'm like, how did my mom get home? I don't even know if she's at home because her cell phone's turned off. She can't even put it together to plug in her cell phone. She doesn't even know how to use the cell. She's just like completely losing her mind. So where I'm at today was like, okay, all right. I don't know what to do. I don't have any control. I don't have any power. All I know is that if I continue to show up and make myself available to be of service to God and to my fellows about me, miraculously, things are going to work out. Things are going to be okay. Because who am I to get in the way of my mom's recovery or my mom's bottom or get involved in anything that my mom has going on? That's not my responsibility. My responsibility, though, is just to call her and try to get a hold of her and tell her, hey, Mom, I love you. Because that's all I can do. And one thing I remember my sponsor telling me years ago, he said, if you ever have a problem in alcoholics that Alcoholics Anonymous cannot solve, seek outside help. So I haven't had a problem yet that I needed to seek outside help. I did go to an Al-Anon meeting at the Hope Center. It was a Steps and Traditions meeting, and I didn't relate. I went there and they said hello, but then they started reading the tradition and I was like, okay. But all I know is that if I continue to clean house, trust God, and help other people, miraculously, my life is going to get better. And that, you know, that I don't have control over anybody but myself. and that I need to just continue to show up and be a good, solid example of a human being today. So thank you for allowing me to come and share tonight. And it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.